The purpose of this podcast is to help people understand how children react to a divorce or to a separation. They don't have the vocabulary to tell their parents how they feel. They don't have the understanding of the relationships, and they don't really know what's happening. It's just that the family is falling apart and it breaks their hearts. The only way I can do this is to tell you my story. Since I went through 3 divorces with my mother by the time I was 14. My story begins in my 4th year. I don't remember the date, but I do remember the day that my father did not come home. My dad had gone as usual for a 4-year-old boy's day, but at dinner time came, my father didn't come home from work. He was a watermaker and worked at the local shipyard. So his schedule was fairly regular, but this day was different. I usually stood at the door and looked for him. And when he came walking up the street, I would yell, "Here comes Daddy," and while bursting out of the door and running down the sidewalk to meet him and jump up in his arms. That day, darkness fell. And I turned to my mother and asked, "Mother, where's Daddy?" Taking him in her lap, she replied, "Son, your daddy isn't coming home anymore." "Why?" I queried. I do not remember her answer. I only remember crying, choking on sobs. I hurt my chest, but crying did not seem to help at all. I couldn't tell time, but in the days that followed, as twilight deepened, I would stand in the front doorway, staring up the street, thinking, maybe Mother was wrong. But he never came home. Did he get hurt? Was he mad at me? Why didn't he come home? If only he'd come home, I'd hug him and kiss him, and then if he was angry, he wouldn't be angry anymore. I wondered if I had done something that upset him. I made him and made him not want to come home. A sense of guilt began to develop in my heart. I promised myself if he came home, I'd be good and I'd not get in any kind of trouble. Well, folks, in my childish world, I couldn't understand why, if he loved me, he didn't come to see me. I wondered if I had done something to make him go away. Had I done something to make him not love me anymore? Was there something wrong with me that caused him not to love me anymore? Hurt, rejection, guilt, and a sense of abandonment were all present. But they went unnamed and unspoken, I didn't know how. Yet their poisonous presence had an effect on my mind and behavior. Divorced and not married anymore were terms that meant nothing to me. One half of my world was Daddy and the other half was Mother. Half my world was gone and I desperately wanted it back. I could not verbalize most of my feelings. I could not think in the abstract to make comparisons. However, looking back, it was as if my father had died. There was no way for me to say any of this, but it did not prevent me from grieving and feeling a deep sense of loss and rejection. "He doesn't live here anymore," Mother told me. Why couldn't he? There was his bed, his place at the table. And someone said he still worked at the same place as before. And Mama said, "Mother and Daddy don't love each other anymore." Oh, my. My grandmother echoed that. Your mother and Daddy don't love each other anymore. Why didn't they love each other? I love them both. Was I supposed to stop loving one? Was it wrong to love them both? I did. And I wanted my daddy. I did not want my spoken and unspoken questions answered. I simply wanted my father. When this incessant longing went unfulfilled, I feel hurt and depressed because he left me. I felt frustrated and helpless because I did not know how to reach him or where he was or how to satisfy my longings to see him. Well, then I would get angry. I'd get upset. I wanted to kick, scream, grit my teeth, and flail arms in mock combat. I was fighting mad, but I did not know what to fight. In my confusion, I'd clench my teeth in a silent scream, go to my hiding place and cry. At 4 years old, I began to stutter when I talked, and I didn't stop stuttering until I was 18 years old. I controlled my open frustration, but the bewilderment and wondering were still there. I would be playing or coloring a picture, and my thoughts would drift to my daddy. Sometimes I would play with a rocking chair upside down and act like it was a bulldozer or something, just as I knew daddy had worked with different kind of machinery. And then my thoughts would drift, and I'd wonder, where is daddy? Oh, I wish daddy were here. Well, I had two imaginary playmates develop. One was my age. I called him Bud. We discussed, planned, and participated in all kinds of adventures together. The other imaginary character was an adult. He was usually in the background, except when Bud and I were involved in mortal combat with an enemy. When danger or a need developed, this imaginary person would step forward into the picture as a powerful, smiling man. He would be our protector and provider. I called him Dad. Well, I hope I can do this. Well, my hiding place was a closet where I would crawl under the hanging clothes, push the shoes toward the door, and curl up against the back wall. I'd wrap my arms around my knees, close my eyes, and enter my make-believe world. Bud was always there. Dad would come later when needed. Well, there were different scenarios for this world as I grew older. Sometimes it was the farm where we lived in Vidor, Texas. We lived there until I was 4. When I was 3 years old, Dad had trained me to recognize different tools by shapes and sizes. And he would take me with him when he went to repair a customer's car at their home. And I would sit on a stool beside his toolbox and hand him tools under the car as he asked for them. So my imagined scenario was a repair shop sometime. I love my grandfather. He was so sweet. He was a tugboat captain. He would occasionally take me to his boat when he would move it to another dock in the Neches River. He would start the enormous diesel engine as I sat on the steps in the engine room. We would go to the pilot house where he would activate the controls and spin the big wheel to steer the boat. I was in heaven when I was with him on the motor vessel Charles Arrow, but it may as well have been the Queen Mary. I enjoyed it so much. It was so impressive to me. Some of my adventures with Bud and Dad would lead to moving barges on the river or where we had challenges and problems. I'd heard my grandfather talk about with his crew. These fellows stopped by frequently to drink coffee and smoke with my grandfather. I did not think he realized that I was a sponge. I was soaking up everything that was said. I even picked up some additional vocabulary from the crew. Oh my. Years later, our neighbor and I were visiting my former neighbor, and he suddenly burst out laughing and said, "Hey, John L., when you were about 4 or 5 years old, you came over to play with our son." I said, "Yeah, I remember those days." He said, "You said to me, 'Mr. Barley, I've learned to cuss. You want to hear me?'" Well, that was the language I'd heard from my grandfather's deckhands. Well, things changed. We were living with my maternal grandparents when Mom and Dad divorced. That family was a natural support group for us. I'd heard Mother say, "John L. needs a man's companionship." She thought my grandfather would provide it. Well, I love my grandfather, but he was not my daddy. I did not need someone to fill a role in my life. I simply wanted my daddy. My new multi-generational family included my grandfather and grandmother, a 12-year-old aunt and a 9-year-old uncle, mom and me. The older uncle was married and was not in the household. He was a frequent visitor as he came by after work every other day. He was a fireman with the Beaumont City Fire Department. My mother's family was broken with the accidental death of her father, Huey Long. For 3 years, my widowed grandmother operated a boarding house near the Neches River. On his way to work, Mitchell Roy Sterling would stop and chat with her. He told us many years later that he thought she was the prettiest woman in the world he'd ever seen. He was 20 and she was 33, with two teenage sons and a 12-year-old daughter at home when they married. Later, they had two children together, Roy and Snooky, real name Gertrude, and the two sons by her first husband, Otis and Aaron. Otis died. Aaron was married before I came into the family. I tell you, folks, it was me being added to that family was really not an answer to my needs. When I look back at our situation, it looked like a recipe for disaster. But to my grandparents' marriage, marriage was a commitment, not simply a decision. Their marriage was a strong influence on my concept of what being married really meant. Well, Mother had to get a job and support our family. Her hours were irregular, and that made me feel insecure. I plagued my grandmother with the question, "Is it time for Mother to get off and come home?" Then I would dash to the door and look for her. It occurred to me that later that I'd waited for my father like that. And one day he did not come home. Would Mother do that someday? What would I do if she did? What if I do if she didn't return home one day? Insecurity began to seep into my small world and crowd out many carefree moments. Folks, you just don't understand all that goes on in a child's mind in the disturbances that come when the family is broken. Frequently, as my mother stepped through the door, I would throw arms around her and bury my face in her coat just to squeeze her and to smell her perfume and know that she was there. At other times, after she came home, I would experience an overwhelming sense of loneliness and crawl up in her lap to cry. I began to stutter more when I talked. My world grew larger as I started to school, but I felt smaller because this new environment kept nudging me in sensitive areas and made the soreness more painful. My teacher asked, "What are your parents' names?" I said, "Johnny and Ruth Lanoue." Her next question, "Well, what is their address?" Well, the question seemed simple enough, but it confused me. Did she mean my mother's address or my father's address? When I asked the teacher which one she wanted, she replied with an attitude of surprise, "You mean they don't live together?" Her words plunged a painful knot in my throat. While biting back the tears and swelling with anger of being hurt, I muttered, "No, ma'am." My schoolmates and I would be playing when the conversation would focus on father. Every boy told how great his dad was, each with greater gusto than the last. My turn came, and I reveled in telling them how my dad used to do this or that and how my dad had done one thing or another with me. And one boy asked, "Does he still?" Jerking back to reality, I answered, "No. I haven't seen him in a long time." "Where is he?" one boy asked me. A deluge of questions followed. When did he go away? Why did he go away? Why doesn't he come back? These were all innocent questions of children's insatiable curiosity. But no knife could have been a bigger dagger to my heart and didn't do it any faster. I choked on my own acknowledgement of ignorance about the family arrangement. My reactions were personal pain and anger. Then the tears would flood my eyes once again. The boys left me when I started to cry. And as others looked quizzically in my direction, my playmate shouted, "He's crying because he doesn't have a daddy." My stuttering increased. Well, when I was 7 years old, Mother told me I was going to see my father soon. I was shocked, ecstatic with joy, and filled with questions about where and when. I heard her, but I did not think to ask any questions about who was with him. It never occurred to me that Dad had someone in his life other than us. I just knew that my daddy was back and he wanted to see me. Mother and my aunt were talking in whispers, which usually meant I was not supposed to hear the discussion, but I managed to get near the doorway unobserved and listen as they discussed someone they called the other woman. Later, I asked whom they were discussing, and my mother said, "Son, your father has married again, and they moved back into town with a new baby." I exclaimed, "Oh, boy! When will I see him?" "Soon," she replied. Well, I was thrilled about just beyond expression. The fact that I was going to see my father blanked out all of the other things Mom had said. It never entered my mind that we had been replaced by the new family, or that the new baby was my competitor for Dad's attention. Several days later, a woman I did not know came to our house and said, "Johnny sent me to get the kid." She and Mother had an argument. That upset me. But all I could think of was going to see my father again after all those years. When we turned into a strange driveway, the woman said, "This is where you and I, Daddy, live." Dad came dashing into the yard, swept me up in his arms, and said, "John L., my son, it is so good to have you back again. How do you like your new mother?" I was so glad to see my father that I only grinned and muttered something positive I sensed he wanted to hear. "New mother?" Huh. I was shocked by the idea. Suddenly my relationship with my father was too crowded. Too many people were involved. They led me into the house, and my father pointed to a crib, and Dad said, "Look, son, here's your new baby sister." I smiled with pride as I choked up with jealous anger, trying to please him. Mother had said something about a new baby, but it didn't register in my mind because of my one consuming desire was to see my father. But now it stunned me. "My what?" I asked. "Your new baby sister," proudly he replied. Somehow I didn't share his pride or his happiness. All I saw was a baby about 6 months old crying in a crib. I was jealous of her. I was angry. I felt I had to compete with her for my father's love and attention. From the next room, I heard Dad say, "She's my redheaded sweetheart." That term infuriated me. I did not know if he was speaking about the baby or her mother. My mother should have been his sweetheart. I was so mad. The term "my redheaded sweetheart" became embedded in my mind and became extremely important to me 52 years later. I asked Daddy, "Why did you go away?" "Well, son, your mother and I just did not get along," he answered. "Well, I want you to come home with me, Daddy." He said, "I can't, son." I said, "Why?" He said, "This is my home now." I was crushed. After that brief conversation, Dad was so busy helping with the baby and doing things around the house that we did not have much time to talk. I went outside and sat on the front steps, and suddenly I wanted to go home very badly. I felt rejected, unnecessary, unneeded, and out of place. That love that I felt for all those years welled up in my chest like an emphysemic breath. It was there, but I couldn't exhale it into an expression. My love was useless. Things had changed so much since I had seen my father. He was familiar, yet he was a stranger. He was my dad, yet he was had another family. I knew him, yet I didn't. These visits left me confused and bewildered, feeling guilty because I had to lie to Dad about liking my half-sister and his new wife. I felt guilty also because, although I loved him, I was very angry with him for not wanting to come home. I was angry because the love and companionship for which I had hungered for so long was now forced, I was forced to share it with strangers. I now felt guilty about being away from my mother and being with people who upset her. My stuttering increased. There weren't many of these visits. I only remember four. The termination came when Dad moved away. I did not hear from him for another 4 years. This second parting did not hurt as sharply as our first one, but the numbed pain was still very real, very deep, and tinged with anger. I found out later that Dad left his second wife and her daughter 18 months later. She died 6 months after the separation. Their daughter lived with her maternal grandparents until she was 9. And when she was in the third grade, she was adopted by her first grade teacher. And I lost all contact and all records. You see, folks, it's a mess. And it just gets worse as time goes on and becomes deeper, deeper. And it hurts so bad. And the children can't express any of this. They're experiencing it, but they don't know how to verbalize it. I was 22 when I wrote these words, this part. It took me that long to where I could verbalize my pain and frustration. So please, when you're considering divorce, consider your children. They didn't ask to be born, and they're yours, and they're your responsibility. In the next podcast I do, I'll talk about how problems begin to surface because of these things in my life. God bless you. Thank you for listening.